Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, April 11th. I'm Ray Graff. It's gardening today, and we welcome back the crew. Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum, and Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery, as well as Dale Isla Riggs of the Berry Patch. You got a gardening question? Give us a call. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551 is the number, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org is the email. The number is 800-348-2551. Always a popular show. It's the gardening show. Call early, get in the queue. We'll do our best. We'll be back after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's gardening today, and we welcome back our dream team, Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery in Great Barrington, Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York, and Dale Isla Riggs is here from the Berry Patch in Steventown, New York, Bob Graves from Fadigan's Nursery. Not here yet, although you never know. The seat is open, so, we'll carry on. Maybe you'll pop in. We welcome your gardening calls. 800-348-2551 is our number. 800-348-2551, or feel free to email us. A lot of people have done that already, and we'll start the show with some emails. But there are a few open lines, so I suggest you give it a shout. 800-348-2551 is the number. Hello, gardeners.
Hello.
Hi there.
Thank you for coming. I feel bad about Bob Graves not being here because, you know, I tend to send about 17 different reminders throughout the week before.
He must have missed those.
I sent one last week, but I don't think I sent one today. Usually I send one in the morning on the day of the show. So this is on me.
You're gonna take the heat for this one?
I'm gonna take the heat for this one, and it's not Bob's fault.
All right, so we won't mark him. We won't mark him absent.
No,
this is an excused absence.
Excused absence. Hey, Dale Isla, the green stuff looks delicious.
Yeah, it's the last of the overwintered spinach, and we're planting the fresh spring spinach. Hopefully, it'll start getting planted in about 20 minutes when somebody shows up to
working. You don't have to do that.
No. I delegate that out to somebody else.
You're an executive organic farmer.
That's nice. Right.
Well, that's great. I love the raw spinach, and you've brought this before, and it's fantastic stuff. Now, you say over winter, so you have hothouse, and it goes all winter long?
Yeah, so the spinach that I brought in today, similar to what I brought in, I think, back in February, we planted last October and November, and it grew during the winter. We harvested it all winter long, and with the long days and warmer temperatures in the spring, it starts to bolt, and which means go to seed, flower and seed. So we're harvesting what's there and enjoying it and pulling it out and getting the beds ready to put something else in for this spring.
And your busy time's about to begin.
Our busy time has already begun. I was showing Susie before the show.
Our screener,
that we have 18-inch tall tomatoes. Ooh. And we have some cherry tomatoes that have open flowers that are getting planted this afternoon. So it's a pretty exciting time of year.
I do want to just make it clear that if you have a tomato and you're thinking about putting it outside, it's a little early. Unless you have one of those houses.
That's correct.
Yes. We actually have not even seeded the tomatoes yet that we will be selling as transplants to people for their gardens.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. Generally, a lot of people like to get a jump on the season, but tomatoes are one that you don't want to start too early.
Right. And actually, there's a nice little tip. If you're one of those gardeners that just can't hold back and you get them started early, you know, you always want a nice blocky, stocky tomato plant, and in these less than sunny days, they get kind of long and lanky.
Yeah,
you can keep them nice and stocky, because research at Cornell showed that if you pull those plants out and once or twice a day, you just brush them with like the top of a broom handle or something like that, go back and forth over them maybe 10 times once a day, that will help keep the plants short.
What? Why? Cool.
Because plants don't grow as much, like wind will keep plants short. So you're kind of simulating the natural environment and things that cause the plant to say, oh, wait, you know, maybe I shouldn't be elongating so much. So for all those people that just can't hold themselves back, there is a way to kind of hold the plants back a little bit.
Get out the The dustpan broom.
Yeah, the dustpan broom, or just something that's not going to be too abrasive against the plants. I have friends every year. They say, oh, my plants are getting too tall and leggy. What should I do? And I say, just brush them.
Yeah, and trees will kind of naturally do that because, you know, ultimately wind stimulates root growth. So, you know, staking trees used to be, hey, we have to stake every tree. But reality is, unless you have a really good reason to stake a tree, you really shouldn't. And you really want that stem to flex in the wind, and it stimulates root growth. But it doesn't make them, and it helps them establish, but it doesn't just make them push out a ton of top growth, and then they're less likely to get blown over.
So. Yeah, so what can you plant outside in a vegetable now? I will say that I put my peas in on Monday, which, you know, is about the right time for the Berkshires.
Yeah, soil temperatures are getting to that point where they'll start to germinate.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of using transplants early in the season
instead
of seeds.
That's what I was thinking of, yes.
Because
yes.
The seeds, especially in this constantly wet soil that we're having, the seeds are more likely to rot. So transplants, but any of the cool season crops, but especially lettuce, the baby greens like arugula, and Asian greens, kale and collards, things like that. Things that can take some light frost nights.
Onions.
Yep, that would
really
be a good one as
time.
Well.
Anything going on over at the nursery? You're getting ready for spring, yeah?
Lots of starts that are cold tolerant to put outside, as well as, yeah, all sorts of various woody and herbaceous plants.
Do you have to go out with the whisk broom on the plants?
By putting them outside, you don't have to do that. Inside, we have actually what we have is lots of fans.
That'll work.
The greenhouse, the fans are going.
All right, let's hit the emails here. It's the Gardening Show with Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs, and possibly Bob Graves. We never know. He'll be here, maybe not. 800-348-2551 is the number. I'm going to pass this around. This email from Mona. I would like to know if this is an American chestnut. I do believe I bought it at the Landis maybe 6 or 7 years ago. It's growing beautifully on my mountain in Bern, New York.
Yeah, that does look like an American chestnut. I would say yes. It's a pretty distinct leaf, and it looks really healthy from the photo. So
good.
I'm glad you got it, and I'm glad it's doing well.
Congratulations on owning a mountain. That sounds pretty good to me.
It's really cool to have a chestnut. I mean, American chestnut's awesome tree. So
this is from Deb. Between 15 and 20 years ago, we planted 3 maples in the front yard. All was well until about 3 years ago, when the first one and then another one started showing less foliage. Early loss of leaves, dead limbs. Eventually, we had to cut one down that was all but dead. Now, the other two are showing the same symptoms. Is there anything we might try to save them? And that's from Depp.
Yeah. So how long ago did they say they planted that?
Between 15 and 20 years ago.
Yep. So unfortunately, you know, we're seeing a lot of across landscapes. It's not a thing that we see in the woods. This is a sort of a man-made problem is that there's a lot of root dysfunction on trees and shrubs. And what we mean by root dysfunction is there's lots of different ways that roots are not spreading out the way that they normally would in nature. Mm-hmm. And container growth often stimulates a lot of circular roots in that container. We've learned in college that you tease those roots back out, try to make them grow into the environment. But the research has showed that the roots don't just magically straighten back out, even though we put a lot of time into teasing them out. So you actually use a crosscut saw that you would use for like cutting a piece of lumber, and you shave off the entire outside surface of that. And the reason for that is all those roots are going to grow straight back out. So the answer to that question is, it sounds like there's a root dysfunction going on. It's not uncommon. And the fact that you're seeing it from one tree to another, and it generally causes, you know, if you have roots that are not functioning, you have thinner crowns. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what is the dysfunction? That's the next question. You know, it could be that the plants were installed too deep. If they were installed too deep, you would look at that trunk where it comes down and meets the roots, and you should see a nice root flare. If you don't see that, it was planted too deep. The trunk goes straight in. You could try scraping some of that soil away. And you might also see that there's a girdling root wrapping around. If you carefully remove some of that soil from around the trees, that could help.
Okay.
You might need to get a consultation from a certified arborist. You might also, if you wanted to send me a few photos of that, if you're listening, I might be able to, you know, help you a little bit. More if you sent me some photos of your trees, especially where they meet the ground. The trunk's at fred@landisarboretum.org.
And how do we spell Landis?
L-A-N-D-I-S-A-R-B-O-R-E-T-U-M, landisarboretum.org.
Gotcha. All right, this is from Michelle, and then we'll take a break. Subject heading, planting with human cremains. I want to, I guess this is common, but I've never heard of it. I want to make seed bombs to distribute to loved ones. What should the ratio of ashes to seeds to soil to clay be? I read that ashes are acidic and too much of them may harm plants. Also, I want to plant an eastern redbud tree and mix some of the cremains into the soil. How much should I mix in with the soil for all of the family and friends who use the person's ashes when planting their flora, whether it's a seed bomb, tree, perennial, or houseplant? A U.S. map will be produced with all of the GPS coordinates, a living tribute to a man who loved nature. And that's from Michelle in Ware, Massachusetts.
That's pretty cool.
Well, it's I don't think they're going to have a problem with whatever is, you know, minerals are still in the ash because it's as soon as they plant it in the ground, all of that will dissipate. Usually ash is somewhat basic, non-acidic.
Interesting.
So that's the only other thing I would mention. But I think, I'm not sure what a seed bomb is. But
no.
I do know what a seed bomb is. So basically, you can make it a number of different ways. We've actually made seed bombs at Landis Arboretum before. And we've used like recycled paper, kind of natural pulpy paper. And you mix seeds in with the paper and you can make it like a cake or you can make it like a little round ball or you can make it a little round, various different shapes for these. And you can just stick them in the ground, and you know some of them we labeled them as the what they were. Huh. We gave a few mystery ones in there too, but you know you could do like a whatever it is, pansy bomb or a a Cosmo bomb.
Japanese knotweed bomb.
If you really wouldn't want to try to, but that'd be nasty. But you certainly could. You can load them up whatever you want. But basically, it's just a little concoction, and the paper is used to hold it in. So if you mix the ash and the paper and various other seeds, it all sticks together, but the paper binds it when you dry it out. It takes a while to dry it.
So if it's small and fits in your hand, then like a teaspoon of the person?
Okay.
Yeah, if it's that kind of small. Usually when we did it, they were all, something that you would hold in your hand quite easily. Even some of them were like 4 or 5 in your hand. It's small.
Hmm. So is this common to do this with the cremains?
I've heard of it before. Yeah.
Well, people plant trees with the cremains.
Oh,
if you're planting a 7 or 8 or 10 foot tree, and there's not that much material that it should be incorporated in the soil and work out.
Yeah,
fine.
The ash generally is a very high buffering capacity, like you had mentioned, and the thing is, but like that small amount, it's not going to make a difference in the garden.
Anybody here going to do that when you go?
I haven't decided yet.
You're going to do that?
Maybe.
Greg Ward?
Yeah, I think I will.
You know, I would like my ashes placed in my happy place, which is a blackjack table at Foxwoods.
Okay.
I'm just gonna put right Let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is our number. Gardening, yes. Sans Bob Graves, but there's still hope. We'll be back. Frank Rossellino on the trombone there. Sneaky Yoso on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 800-348-2551. Gardening show today with Delilah Riggs from the Berry Patch, Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, and Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum. Fred, you want to plug something real quick before we hit the phones?
Yeah, thanks, Ray. Just wanted to mention at Landis Arboretum on April 27th, we have two events planned, a hawk watch, which will be from 10 to 4. We've had a lot of great sightings from the meeting house deck, an awesome spot to see hawks, and our nature educator, George Steele, will be hosting that. And then we also have a house plant swap that same day, April 27th, and that'll be from 11 to 1, and all the details are on our website, landisarboretum.org. But basically, the houseplant swap is, bring a plant, a house plant to share, and most likely you're going to come home with more than a plant with you. So,
all right. And how do people find out about all this stuff?
Yep. So landisarboretum.org. It's our best marketing tool out there, and it's our one-stop shop for everything going on with Landis.
10-4. Let's hit the phones now. 800-348-2551. Mike is in Queensbury. Mike, you're up.
Hi, Ray. Hi, guys. I just got a pergola on our patio. It's 10 by 16, and I would like to get it covered with a live top, old growth vine. It's on the east side of the house, so it's going to get some morning sun, and then it's going to be completely shaded by the house by, I don't know, one or two. And we were just considering options for what to grow on it. Grapes came to mind, or some other flowering vine came to mind. And we're in Queensbury. I think is that growing zone 5?
Yeah. Yep.
There's lots of choices. Grape is a pretty popular one. Hydrangea vine, the vining form of hydrangea. The native honeysuckle, Lonicera sempervirens, is kind of fun. Lots of tubular flowers in midsummer. Good hummingbird attractant.
Would you consider trumpet vine?
Dutchman's pipe, or trumpet vine.
Yep.
Sure.
Yep. Trumpet
vine.
Trumpet vine
did come to mind. I was given advice by a local garden store about that it can kind of like take over, send out its roots,
and pop up.
It is 30-foot.
Usually, wisteria trumpet vine are vines that are very aggressive, will grow quite a bit, and you end up having to do a lot of pruning to sort of maintain them. The grape would take some pruning. The honeysuckle would be pretty slow and probably not so slow that it wouldn't get to the top, but would almost never really get too woody and have too much mass. You would, that would work pretty well. And then the hydrangea vine is a relatively slow, but again, not a lot of pruning for quite some time.
No, the hydrangea is probably one of the climbing hydrangea is probably one of the nicest vines out there. One of my favorites anyways, I should say. And it will eventually cover, but it's a slower growing plant. But boy, oh boy, when it gets covered, it's really amazing.
Yeah, I mentioned Dutchman's
pipe. I think we were looking for really something a little quicker because I'm not sure how long we'll get to enjoy it. A lot of people have mentioned clematis too. Are there old vine clematis that would work as well?
Yeah, so clematis can work pretty well. They do take a little while to create cover, but to have one on each post, getting to the top relatively quickly and blooming profusely in June into July works really well. Would work within the first few years, but to have it cover the top would take an extended period of time.
Yeah, which would trumpet vine might be a better choice if you're looking for like faster. It's easy to grow, but then like you had mentioned, it's going to take more pruning to keep it at bay.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate the call. It's Gardening Today on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Now to East Greenbush. Carl, you're on.
Hello. I got a question about transplanting irises, the bearded irises.
Okay.
Which in my case have grown over on top of my asparagus roots. So I was wondering if it's a bad time of year to do it, and if it's an okay time of year to do it, what do I got to do to protect the asparagus?
Well, if you don't like where they are, it's always a good time to do it. Just, they'll lift pretty easily. Usually the cycle is they're coming up and going into bloom in, May, June, and so you're trying not to disturb them during that time. And then July and August, you can divide them, take them up, completely remove them and replant them mid-late August, and then you have the whole fall and then early spring for them to settle in and bloom again. But you have a problem. You want to save your asparagus, so I would definitely take them up now, this week or in the next couple of weeks. If you can remove them with some soil and not really pull them apart too much, I'm sure they'll spike and bloom if they're nice and full already, and I don't think they'll really care. And then if they're mixed right into your asparagus, that you may have to bare root one or the other in order to separate them properly.
Yeah, the carb.
Okay, I got it. Thanks.
Okay, thanks a lot for the call. Satisfied customer. 800-348-2551 is our number. And let's see here. Let's go to Lynn in Shelburne Falls. Lynn, you're on.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
When is it too early to plant grass? What can it tolerate?
Grass seed can be put down today, anytime. You could really, you can put it down in the winter. It just waits for the weather to warm up.
Oh,
usually germination is happening usually for our area, mid-April to the first week or so in May is sort of the first weeks of seed germination for perennial grass seeds.
Yeah, it's just starting to get to the beginning of a really good time. So, you know, like you said, any time really now would be good. And once it establishes, if we hit a period of drought, you really want to make sure you're watering that grass to break up drought times. It's grass is a great drought-tolerant plant, but not when you're establishing it. So just get it through that establishment part, and it has enough roots to take on itself and care for itself, then you're good to go. But that, you know, key is to don't let it dry out once it's starting to grow.
Yeah, and that's where the weather forecast right now would be good.
Yeah,
it's supposed to stay pretty moist, so I would get some out soon.
Okay.
Okay, that sounds great. Also, I just want to mention the trumpet vine thing. I grew it from seed. Had to refrigerate it for a couple of months or something. I can't remember. But I planted it next to the house, and it will attach to the wallboards on the outside of the house and make it very difficult to get off. And it went into my garden into a way that was just outrageous. I've been cutting it back for years now, but it's still trying to make it. That's what I have to say about the trumpet vine.
Fred, you want to comment on that?
No,
Lynn, thanks a lot.
I agree there. She, you know, it can be an aggressive vine. You are going to have to cut it back. If you have a structure that, you know, you're worried about, like careful with siding, I agree. It's not the best vine for you. But it has great applications. It does have a good spot. Hey, I want a thick vine on this area, and it doesn't really matter. It's tough soil, and this plant doesn't care. And it has a really cool flower, but it's, you know, make sure you're putting it in the right spot.
Gardening today on Vox Pop, it's Fred Breglia from Landis Arboretum, Dale Isla Riggs from the Berry Patch, and Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery. And the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Peter in Saratoga writes, we have a 17-foot point for our water, and we have very high water table. We hit water about 3 or 4 feet down. I just met with a local landscape company that said that applying just fertilizer, no herbicide or pesticide, would feed the grass and would be safe. The distance from the application area to the point would be about 75 feet. Is it safe to apply fertilizer throughout the year? And that's from Peter in Saratoga.
I mean, I think my first feeling is that, you know, and I know I'm in the business, but do you have to fertilize your grass? Is it really critical to you to have a grass? Because if you're fertilizing the grass, it's because you probably want this very thick, perfect lawn. And that also means you have to control other things, other broadleaf weeds. So if you don't have to fertilize the grass, just think about the garden areas. You can use a lot of compost in those areas. Seems like the water table is really high if it's only 3 feet down, and whatever you apply to your lawn is going to end up in the water.
But an organic fertilizer might work for something.
And certainly an organic
fertilizer
would be the choice, but you still will have some nitrates
you would leach out.
Right.
Yeah. And it's a good point. Sometimes you don't really need to put a lot of extra fertilizer down. A lot of people get caught up in the spot, hey, it's spring, it's time to fertilize, or it's time to prune, but we have to really have a good reason to prune, or a really good reason to apply fertilizer, because fertilizer just haphazardly applied to a lawn, you're using usually high nitrogen products, and all the trees that are surrounding your landscape, their roots are all in that lawn. They're all coexisting.
Yeah.
And those trees don't want high nitrogen. So whatever you're doing to your lawn, unless you don't have a lot of trees around there, you're doing to all your plants, you're doing to all your garden. So in some cases, I've recommended people, you know, hey, what kind of organic fertilizer are you using in your gardens? And that could be just applied to the lawn.
Now, as far as the safety of this, is there a central location where this person could go and get some really definitive information on the safety of that based on the distance from the well and the depth of the water?
I don't know. I would think that the testing your water, periodically would be the only way you could figure that out.
It also is going to depend on soil type, because if it's a really sandy soil, there's a much higher likelihood of the nitrate leaching than if it's a heavier soil. I would say be doing some testing of the water.
And getting back to the lawn for a minute, right now your lawn has that sort of brownish, greenish look, and you think it might need some kind of boost. But if you simply wait another couple of weeks, you'll be mowing it, if that's what you're planning to do, and it will look pretty good.
And the more fertilizer, the more often you're going to mow.
Sometimes the more foliar diseases that you attract, because fertilizer rich, fungus likes to eat rich, really rich, mineralized, nutrient dense foliage. So if it's, if you got a disease on your plant, give it nitrogen, lots of nitrogen, you'll actually spread that out. It'll be worse.
All right, this one is from Marty and Hadley. Two questions. Is it too early to plant Asian iris bulbs? That's one.
Is it too early to plant the bulb? So if you usually the bulb form of iris is planted in the fall, and they're referred to as Dutch iris. So Asian is not something I'm not quite sure.
Okay.
If you have some German iris, as the gentleman talked about before, and they're in some kind of bare root form, it's not really a bulb form, go ahead and plant those right away. But most of the irises don't really come as a bulb. They come as a rooted mass, except for those Dutch iris.
All right. And the second question is, I have some kind of scale on my black raspberry canes. I've treated it and scraped off the scale as best I could. Do I need to keep treating it? The bed is pretty old, but very prolific, and that's from Marty and Hadley.
Yeah, so I haven't heard about scale being on black raspberries before, so you might want to get that ID'd to make sure that it is scale. But certainly a dormant oil of horticultural oil application at this time of year is the best way to deal with any of the early season pests that are on, whether it be brambles or fruit trees or whatever.
Okay. Number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. It's Gardening Today with Fred Breglia and Greg Ward and Dale Isla Riggs, and we'll go to Post and Kill. Diane, you're on.
Hi. I bought a beautiful lilac bush last year from Fadigan, and a deer promptly ate every leaf off of it. And I'm wondering if it will come back. I did put netting over it over the winter to keep them from actually eating the bush. But I'm wondering if this is fatal.
No, it'll come back. It ate it at a time. Obviously, it happened during the fall and winter when the deer ate it, I'm assuming. And then there's got so much stored.
No, it ate it immediately.
Oh, it ate it right.
It ate it by June. Every leaf was gone.
It ate it in the middle of summer. Oh wow.
Yeah.
All right. So then, when they ate all of the foliage off it in the middle of summer, did you see foliage in the fall, or no? Never came back.
Nothing.
So then, it's safe to say that plant would not be coming back this spring. I mean, if you were in any doubt, you could scratch the branches, and if it showed bright green, there's a chance. But if it didn't leaf out, once it got eaten, and if it didn't leaf back out by the end of the summer, by fall, there's, it's not good. So it's going to be a takeout and replant.
I would say before you take it out, I think you could wait until, for a couple more weeks. The one thing I would ask is, are there any, green or purplish leaf or flower buds sitting on any of the ends of the wood? When you look at the plant today, do you see anything that looks like a bud?
I looked this week. I did not see anything that looked like a bud.
So everything looks dry and kind of just like a stick.
Okay.
Yeah, so this...
Yeah, I wouldn't say it looks, dead. It just looks...
So
there's nothing there that suggests it's going to get leaves.
So scratch the, you know, just get a like a knife or a pruner and just scratch the bark and see if you see green under that bark. If you see green on any of those stems, then I would definitely leave it and just see what happens. It's worth it.
Okay.
Lilacs are just starting to bud out, you know, pretty good now. So, but if you scratch those twigs and you see brown, they're dead. There's a really small chance that, you know, maybe the root system has a little bit of life in it, and it might send up some new suckers. So,
right.
You know, I've seen amazing things happen in nature, you know, on plants, and you know, they sometimes, you know, they're in survival mode. There's a very strong survival instinct there. So, you know, they want to live. So, you know, when in doubt, give it a little extra time before you pull it out.
All right, let's. We have about a minute and a half, 2 minutes before the next break. Let's get one more call in before then. Joan is in Schenectady. Joan, you're on.
Hey, Ray. Good to talk with you again.
Hello.
And hello, all you experts.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi. Hello, hello, hello. I have a pretty simple question, I think.
Okay.
I'm much more closer to a garden girl, not in your guys' league, but than to a domestic goddess. So while cleaning, I found a very dry honey nut squash. It was beautiful when I got it. I know it's organic. If I cut it open, is there a good chance those seeds are safe to use?
There's a good chance that those seeds are going to sprout and grow a plant, but there's an even better chance probably that the plant that it'll grow will not be true to the squash that you got it from.
What do you mean, be true?
I'll let Delilah explain that in more detail, but...
So squash always cross-pollinate. So you don't know what pollen landed on that squash plant to make that honey nut squash. It might have been, it could be from something totally different, and it might be edible, it might not.
So if she grew no other squash in her yard and her neighbors did not either, do you think it would be
right.
true?
I still would be very hesitant. Okay. You know, you might wind up with a whole lot of gourds.
Okay.
They look like gourds.
Which is really fun.
Yep.
It is very fun, but
right.
if they have a certain compound in them and you try to eat them, it could actually make you sick.
Oh, don't do that, Joan. Be careful.
Okay, so decoration, but keep it away from food plants.
Yep, that's what I would recommend too.
Yeah. All right, we got to take a break here. Joan, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. If you want to call, 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. It's gardening today. Ray Graff here, and over there is the gardening crew. Dale Isla Riggs from the Berry Patch, Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, and Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum. Tell you what, gang, let's do a stack of emails here. We'll try to not race, but move quickly, kind of a lightning-ish round. This one's from Nancy, subject heading Native Trees. How important is it to be certain that I am planting a true eastern red cedar as opposed to a cultivated variety, when one of my reasons to plant them is to attract cedar waxwings? That's from Nancy.
So if you're digging one up from local, you know, from the county, then it's certainly true. And if the tree is labeled at a nursery or garden center as just juniper or Juniperus virginiana with no other name after it, no other selection name, then those are all true red cedars, just the species.
Right.
The trick here is that there are male and female plants that they don't, so you may or may not have one that will fruit. And sometimes it takes them, you know, usually 4, 5, 6 feet tall before they start forming any kind of fruit. They don't usually do much of it when they're a foot tall.
Okay, this is from Barbara. Would you please recommend a small shrub with 3-season interest for incorporating in my perennial bed?
It's
3-season interest.
So right now there are some little compact chokeberries. I think we've probably talked about these before. Aronia is the old genus. They got a new one now, and I can't remember what it is. But there are these selections of chokeberry, which are typically these 6-7 foot tall, kind of wispy, really fun plants with great fall color, really nice spring white flowers, and then in between that, before the they have fall color, some really interesting either red fruit or black brown, black blue fruit, and that happens usually August, September. So there's your three seasons. Winter season is pleasant, you know, but there are these compact forms that will stay nice and small. Ground hug, low-scape something or other. There's a few different varieties. There are some compact or dwarf forms of red twig dogwood, really great winter interest.
Winterberry holly would be another potential.
And then there's some compact winterberry hollies.
Compact forms.
Yep. I keep thinking about a perennial bed wanting it not to be more than 3 or 4 feet tall.
Me too. You know? Me too. Yeah, that's the way I envision it. If you have a really big bed, we can get away with bigger plants. Spice bush, though, might be another neat one.
And spice bush would be fun.
There's some lower, smaller ones of them as well. They will go 6 feet if you let them.
The one that often comes to mind first, and if it can get 4 or 5 feet, it's good, is Fothergilla. Fothergilla is really has some fun winter interest as well as summer and fall.
That's another incredibly underutilized, great shrub. It never needs pruning. It's in our perennial garden at the Arboretum. It's a great selection. We may have some available at our plant sale coming up weekend after Mother's Day this year.
All right, here's one I'm going to throw Dale Isla's way. This is from Mike in Saratoga. Good hardy vegetable to grow. I'm in Saratoga Springs. Aside from tomatoes and nightshades on broccoli, parentheses, yuck, what is a good hardy vegetable that thrives pretty well and has decent bounty for space used?
I love cucumbers.
Oh, yeah.
Bounty for space used. Easy to grow. You can grow them vertically. You can do multiple plantings of them. And you can use them both fresh or make pickles out of them.
Mm.
Snap peas.
Snap peas are a good one. They're not as long a season. Eggplant is also certainly a nice one. It's a solanaceous one, and cabbages as well. You can use them in so many different ways.
Okay, very good. Now, I want to make it clear, the yuck was in the email. That was not my editorializing.
But it was broccoli you were talking about.
Yeah, well.
So, I mean, I agree with it, but I didn't write that.
He didn't write the script.
And I agree with it on the broccoli, too.
All right, fair enough. Yeah. Joanne writes, and then we'll hit the phones again.
Broccoli.
Joanne has a question about phlox. Grass is growing within my phlox, saith Joanne. A lot of grass. How can I get rid of it without digging up and beginning again?
she's probably talking about the creeping phlox, the subulata, that nice sort of moss-like plant that blooms in May, because that's where the grass would be most noticeable. You can just get down on your knees and slowly spread them apart and find the grass base and tease it out of there and hope you tease out as much root as possible. Mm. And then I think if you did that and you were, diligent and put some time in, your phlox would look really good for this bloom time. And you wouldn't have to worry about it again until it showed up after bloom time. And then you could decide whether or not maybe you do want to lift it, the phlox that is, get all the grass out of there and replant the phlox. If you do that by any time, you could do it midsummer if it's a little hot. You could wait till August, September. If you did it then, it would fill right in and look really good by late fall because it's pretty quick.
Okay. Let's go back to our phones. We'll try to hit the emails again if we have time toward the end of the show. The number is 800-348-2551. Gil is in Chatham. Hello, Gil. Hello, Gil. Buddy. Gil's nodded off. He was on hold a while. Last chance there, Gil. Goodbye, Gil. Let's go to Rome, New York. Amy, you're on.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
You betcha.
Okay. So I have, you'll see my ignorance with outdoor plants right now. But so I have a plant that's been really just invading our backyard, and it's really taking over. I'm wondering if it's a raspberry. A set of raspberry bushes. I don't know how fast they grow and how fast they take things over, because there are raspberry bushes that are growing within these other things that we're trying to kind of cut down and destroy, because they, right now at this time of year, they're just these incredibly, tremendously long vines. I'm talking anywhere from 4 feet long to like 10 feet long, just, you know, winding through my yard, winding through each other. They're mostly red right now. They do turn green as it usually gets closer to summer, and like very, very, they're just full of thorns, but they don't all raspberry. So I don't know if it's another plant with the raspberries, but they're so invasive. We're trying to figure out how to get rid of them. And we can't cut them down fast enough, or and they're very, very well rooted, most of them. So we're literally digging them out with a shovel. And I, when I tell you there's probably hundreds of them at this point, there's hundreds of them, I think. Mm. So we have about 2 acres of land, and they've taken about half an acre.
So
I don't know if raspberries grow that quickly or something else grows with them.
Yeah, so black raspberries are pretty common out there. And then multiflora rose could be mixed in with that, and they both have thorns. You know, the stems can be red on the roses, but usually they're green at this point. What I keep thinking about is, if you don't want either of those plants or any of these plants there, is why wouldn't you just mow it with some kind of aggressive mower to take it down, so that you can therefore eliminate them by not letting them grow? They will sort of peter out.
We tried that for the last two summers, and we thought we were keeping up on it. I worry about using like our big mower, because I don't want to hurt it, because some of the stems get so thick and they're so long that I didn't know if they would get wound up in the blades, because they're so incredibly long, and some of them bind, you know, they kind of grow up a little ways, maybe about 2 or 3 feet, and then they start to kind of go vertical on me and then fall on each other and grow within each other. So if we get to that point each season where if we haven't gotten to them, you know, by a certain height, then we've lost the game for that season, it seems.
Sounds like you have some rows in there for sure, because they would be thick. They would be the really thick ones. And if you don't have the machine and you can't rent the machine, you know, you can hire someone to just really take it down to the nub. And then at that point, if they can take a fight, you might be able to run them over with your mower on a weekly basis to eliminate them. But it will take the summer to do it.
And if you think about the timing on this, you know, timing is key, because you could do this for the rest of your life and lose. And you could do this for a much shorter period of time and win. So we think about all these plants that have no leaves, how are they going to put leaves on really, really soon, if not already? They're going to do that through stored energy. Mm. So you really, for timing wise, you want to let the plant use all the stored energy to kind of put leaves out, and then come in and cut it as Greg mentioned, right to the ground. So if you don't have the equipment, then there are services like a brush hog that would, you know, very quickly cut all that down, chop it all up into a mulch. You don't have to clean any of it up, And then what's going to happen is, if you timed it perfectly right, you're still going to get a bunch of regrowth. But then you're going to have to come back in with, maybe at that point, everything's chopped up good. Now maybe your mower would be good for the second cut, and you mow all that down again. And you do that a few times as it begins to regrow. If you do that like several times, 3 or 4 times, before it gets a chance to put leaves on and start to photosynthesize and store food, you're going to get very little regrowth, and you're going to win the battle. If you,
Dale Anna.
Yeah, and the other thing, it doesn't sound like raspberries to me, because they don't grow as fast as what you're describing. So get it cut down, and then I'm a big fan of smothering it. So get some heavy-duty black tarping, mm-hmm. or landscape cloth or something. But once you get it cut down after Fred says that first flush of growth, yep. so that you're eliminating that first set of reserves, tarp it. And you need it nice and tight, but by doing that, they're not going to be able to photosynthesize, yep. and you'll be able to smother them that way.
Yep. Amy, thanks for the call. How long do you have to tarp it?
Probably 1 month would definitely do it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can get a huge piece. If it's a big piece of property, they sell agricultural plastic in rolls, you know, so you could easily get a roll that would, you know, it sounds like a lot, but, you know, they do this in fields.
All right, let's go to Gloversville, and Evie or Evie, either one. You're
it's
on.
Evie.
Hi, Evie.
Hi, Ray. Hi to your guests.
Hello.
Just a question. When we had the last snowstorm, and it was a really wet snow,
yep.
Our birch tree, it's like got 3 trunks to it. It's a river birch.
Yep.
It's pretty nice size. It just like sort of got weighted down, all the branches on almost all three of the trunks.
Yep.
And I was out there with the broom trying to, you know, get the snow off, and it, you know, it's a real, it's crazy. But so should I just let it be, or was I right to sort of get out there and try to get all the snow so that the branches could go back up?
Getting the snow off was good. That's correct. Yeah, that's.
Oh,
you know,
okay, because it was. It was not easy with a broom, you know,
nope.
And you get all wet and you get all, but okay,
yep,
thank you.
Yeah, and if you need to, if it doesn't want to bounce back up, you might be able to sort of tie them a little bit temporarily with something that's not going to really injure the trunk to try
right,
to train
okay.
them to stay a little more upright. The problem with the clump birches is just what you said. Sometimes, you know, snow will push them down, and sometimes they'll bounce right back up. Sometimes they'll
uh-huh.
stay like that, so you might want to, you know, you might have to do a little
oh.
bit of engineering to get them to. Sort of, you
okay,
know,
thank you for
up.
Telling me that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Yorktown Heights. Cookie, you're on.
Hi. We had, 40 years ago, we planted beautiful forsythia along our property to act as a privacy wall. And they grew so tall and wonderful, and the forsythia blooms unfortunately began folding over onto the edge of the curb. Sadly, a neighbor complained, so we had to cut the beautiful blossoms back. And now we have sparse blooms on top of 3-foot bare bone branches, and we don't know what to do.
Okay.
So the entire hedge now is just sort of sheared in this sort of rectangle that's 3x3, or your side you let go and is still...
I'm sorry, can you please repeat that?
Just come a little closer there, Greg.
I'm just curious as to what the hedge looks like now. Is the entire hedge was sheared all the way around, and it's just this 3-foot tall, 4-foot tall sort of rectangle of a hedge?
Branches. And then on top of these branches are what's left of the blooming forsythia.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
So basically, 3 feet up, we only have branches grow, which are part of the plant that's growing
right.
these forsythia that are left over.
If you can... Maybe you have a new neighbor now, and you can convince them not to prune the hedge. What you need is for a lot of new growth to happen. The flowers are forming... You know, during the early midsummer, July, and if you're shearing the plant, cutting it back from July 15th or later, then you're removing a lot of potential flowers. That and there's not enough time, even if you get a lot of any new growth, there's not enough time to put out a lot more growth, which would then have more flowers. So if you can
flowers
leave
now
it alone.
And have not cut the forsythia back because they're 3 feet off the ground and they're not bothering any neighbors anymore.
Okay.
So we don't know what to do help. I don't know what to do. Should we cut, get rid of them and replant? Or I don't know what to do.
No, the good news is that the forsythia is a very tough plant, and I've seen them, you know, beat beyond all belief. I've seen snowplows just shear them right off at the base, you know, and they can come back, and they can be rejuvenated. It's going to take someone that maybe with a little bit of skill to be able to know how to overcome that, but it's not hard, so don't despair. I think you can probably maintain that a little bit smaller within the confines that'll keep your neighbor happy and
okay.
you. It's not a lost cause yet.
All right, Cookie, thanks a lot. We'll have to leave it there. Delilah Riggs, you guys open for business yet?
Not yet.
When does that happen?
Mid to late May.
Okay, if people want to find you online just to sort of keep up.
TheBerryPatch.net.
All right, Greg Ward. Ward's Nursery presumably has been open.
We are open for business, yeah, 8 to 5, I think. Wardsnursery.com or 600 South Main Street, Great Barrington, Mass.
And Fred Breglia, the Landis Arboretum.
Yeah, we're at 174 Lake Road, Esperance, New York, landisarboretum.org.
And that's it for today's program. Thanks for being here, everybody. Appreciate it. And thanks for calling in. Sorry if we didn't get to your call or your email. We will be back in 2 weeks and do this topic again and again and again every 2 weeks through the growing season. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Thanks to Susie Chekai, who screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's Food Friday. Oh, Rocco DeFazio. You know, what are we going to talk about? Well, no one knows. It's like having Sinatra in the house. He does whatever he wants. Rocco DeFazio tomorrow at 2. We'll see you then.